and welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Kay Murray, joined in the studio by Ali Moreno and Stevie Nicol, and we will start by talking about Arne Slot once again, because what we are seeing is that Liverpool and Feyenoord have now verbally agreed a compensation package, according to reports. Let's hear from Jurgen Klopp then on Arne Slot.
I would like a lot about it at first moment that if he is the one that wants to take the job, really. And he's desperate, but come on, let's go for it. Excited, rather. I like the way his team play football. I can say that definitely. All the things I hear about him as a guy, good guy. Some people I know him. I don't know him yet, but some people tell me that he's a really good guy, and I like that a lot. So, good coach, good guy. Looking forward for the club if he's the solution. Or the man, then I'm more than happy. It's not up to me to judge the things, but that sounds all really good to me. What about the rest of the question?
What kind of job is he taking? How would you describe it?
Best job in the world, best club in the world, best job in the world. And obviously now help even with not finishing on a high, it looks like. So there's space for improvement, let me say it like that. Great job, great team, fantastic people. It takes a good, would take a really, really interesting job.
Julien Laurent joining us now to talk more about this. It looks as though Arne Slot is going to be the one. Jules, tell us why Liverpool have decided on this man.
Yeah, you're right. The two clubs have found an agreement tonight. Feyenoord and Liverpool, around €11 million with bonus included, add-on included. For Arne Slot, I mean, they're getting one of the, really, if you think about the Eredivisie, let's say the sixth best league in Europe, which it is, I think, then he's one of the best managers in the last 3 years in the six big leagues. There's no doubt about that. He obviously won the double domestically. He got to the Europa League final with Feyenoord, lost to Roma. But overall, it's been a really good time for him at Feyenoord. The way he plays, he's a very proactive coach with a lot of running, a lot of pressing, really fit players, a lot of cutbacks, for example. This is one of his main traits. What I like the most, I guess, about Arne Slot is how he improves the players, because it's one thing to be great tactically and to have a good style of play and putting a good system in place. But I think improving players, especially young players, is something that he's very, very good at, that he's done at Feyenoord through all those years. And I think something that there's no reason for him to change, that he could do at Liverpool as well with some of the players there. So I think he ticks a lot of the boxes. He speaks very good English, obviously. He's had European experience. He's been winning in his domestic league. Maybe his league is not as good as the Bundesliga that Klopp had won before coming to Liverpool. But certainly, I think he ticks a lot of the boxes that are exactly what Liverpool wanted. And he's also, in terms of data, there's a lot of similarities between his Feyenoord team and Klopp and Liverpool and the club.
See, you're going to be fine.
You're going to be all right, Stevie.
I'll tell you what, though. This is what makes Klopp stand out from everybody else. I mean, who do you know leaving a job turns round and says, well, I'm basically leaving you with room for improvement? I mean, who does that? Nobody does that. He's putting himself down. That's incredible. Leaving a job like that and saying there's room for improvement. Unfortunately, the fact that he does that, and the fact of the personality he is, and his character and the way he is, that's what's going to be difficult for Arne Slot. I don't think it's not going to be the coaching or the tactics or anything like that. It's having a strong personality and being honest. Liverpool fans love honesty. They don't want to hear tall tales about improvement when it's not happening or excuses. They want straight talking and they want character. Now, if this guy has those two things, allied with the players that he's been given just now, and hopefully he will add to it, then he has a chance. That's what he's got right now. He's got a chance.
What do you want to see after the first, say, 5 or 10 games if he's coached next season? What will make you say, OK, maybe this was a good appointment?
Be competing at the top of the league. I don't want a two draws, two losses, two defeats kind of scenario where it's, well, we're finding our feet and all that. No. I want a good start. I want a winning start. Primarily because of the team that he's been given. It's a team that's been at the top of the league for most of the season. It's a team that clearly just isn't quite good enough. So the fact that you're taking over a team like that, you've got to get them back on track quickly.
But it's a team of players that any coach would love to be coaching, surely, Ali.
Well, and that's why when Arne Slot was asked about this, he said, yeah, yes, I want the Liverpool job. Of course. And while I appreciate, and Jules did a really good job of lining up the things that Arne Slot has doing, and on paper, it all seems like he has taken all the necessary steps to now take this big jump, which, look, at some point, you got to take a chance if you're Liverpool. And if I'm a Liverpool fan and I put myself in that position, what I would want to see is that, yeah, that this is a big jump, but that there isn't a leap into the unknown. And that could be the situation because we don't quite know. None of us do, actually. None of us do. Not even Arne Slot does. None of us know how his relation and with the players is going to develop in a short period of time. In order to get to that good start that Stevie's talking about, that relation has to be right from the very first meeting. And from the very first meeting, as Stevie knows and I know, when you have a new manager that shows up, you get a really good idea as a player what this guy is all about. And what kind of message he has and whether you can believe and get behind that message. And so his first few days at Liverpool and the interactions with those players has to be right on point from the very beginning in order to get this going in the right direction. And if you do, then all this momentum that Steve is talking about in terms of the talent personnel that you have available, then that takes over. But if the guys don't buy into whatever he's selling from early on, it's going to be tough because he's always going to be compared to that guy, the other guy, Gaffer, Klopp, when the Gaffer was here. And when you have that sort of conversation, it makes it very difficult for everybody to perform at their best level.
And that guy's got a few more games yet as Liverpool manager. In fact, this weekend they will be taking on West Ham. And even though they are now huge outsiders when it comes to the title race, when it comes to our predictions, we've all been a lot more favourable towards Liverpool. Every single one of us tonight has got Liverpool winning this game this weekend. And we'll be looking back on it on the next edition of ESPN FC. Be sure to be with us every single day to keep up to date with all the biggest games and all the biggest stories in football.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Haaland, De Bruyne, Stevie and Shepherd's Pie, Shaka and Naps, all great teammates. But what's the perfect teammate for growing your business? Well, that's Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify makes it easy for you to show up exactly the way you want to. Customize your online store to your style with gorgeous, flexible templates and powerful tools. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/FC. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/FC now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/FC.
And And one of the massive stories this weekend is the North London Derby. Arsenal taking on Tottenham Hotspur away from home ahead of the game. We heard from Big Ange on what some of the consequences would be. We're just taking a look at this. Will Spurs wreck Arsenal's dream? Well, will they? Let's hear from the Spurs manager, Ange Postecoglou.
There's a feeling among some Spurs fans that a priority is that whatever happens with Spurs this season, they don't want to see Arsenal win the league. Do you understand that? What's your take on that, with some fans feeling that?
Yeah, I mean, it's fair enough. Again, I'm not going to dictate how fans feel or what they feel is important. We understand the importance of the game, and we understand the importance of, you know, in, particularly at home in these kind of games, to not let, you know, our biggest rival or you know, and the biggest derby for us get on top of us. So we understand the consequences.
We understand the consequences. Okay, Jules, let's start with you on this one. What are we looking out for here? Do you think this is an easy win for Arsenal?
No, easy win for Arsenal? No, it won't be. Even if Spurs had... are not as good as they were maybe at the start of the season. 2024 had been tough for them. They lost at home against Wolves. They were behind against Palace. They were 1-1 at half-time against Forest, for example, again in their own stadium. They got destroyed away at Fulham. They got obviously destroyed away at Newcastle as well in the last game. They haven't played for 2 weeks. I don't know if it's good to not play for 2 weeks after being destroyed like they did at Newcastle, or if it's better to play straight after to almost try to forget such a heavy defeat. But in the meantime, Arsenal have played 4 more games, so you would expect Spurs to be fitter, certainly, even if they haven't played for 2 weeks. More rested, for sure, but they will be at home, and they are still fighting for that top four finish. We still don't know if fifth place will take you into the Champions League next season from England. So top four is a must for them, and just for that reason only, even if Arsenal were not fighting for the title, this is a must-win game for them.
Yeah, obviously, a lot of momentum going Arsenal's way when it comes to their away record as well. They have the best away record in the Premier League right now. And you can see 39 goals scored in those games, 17 of them. 11 wins, 3 draws and 3 losses. But it looks as though Spurs are going to get to have a big say in this title race, Stevie.
Yeah, I'll be honest, I'm not quite as confident as other people that Spurs can take points off Arsenal. I mean, other than it being a derby, and I did say last week that I was worried about Liverpool playing Everton in a derby because it was a derby, and it proved to be right. But other than that...
Good job, Stevie. Good
other,
job.
Other than that, I don't see any other reason why Tottenham takes anything from Arsenal. I mean, they've become unpredictable. They've certainly become really, really open all the time. If you look at the other side of the fence on Arsenal, you talk about predictable, consistent, an incredible level. And they will love, that front three of Arsenal's will love having the space the Spurs are going to give them. Because Spurs aren't going to change the way they play. They're going after this. And if you're Arsenal, with the defence, certainly the way they've defended this year, that's why they're top of the league. As much as for scoring goals, they're top of the league because they've got a great defence. And I'll tell you what, when that ball gets turned over and Arsenal get it at that back line of Spurs, that's why I've got goals written all over this game.
You see them putting 4 goals past them away from home.
I think I've been actually kind on reflection, given Tottenham 2. But I certainly can see Arsenal scoring 4 goals the way that Spurs play the game. They're wide open. Arsenal absolutely take advantage of teams that leave themselves wide open. So, it is a derby. That's the only reason, in my opinion, that could change this result. Nothing else. Certainly not form, certainly not the way they play, nothing like that.
Is it the derby factor that's made you say it's a draw?
Well, a couple of things. Yeah, the derby factor, which has the potential of making this match about emotion. Not quality of play, not talented players on the field, but emotion. And emotion can carry you a long way if you're Spurs. If it is about execution and quality of execution, then it should be Arsenal that should win this game. But because it is a derby, maybe emotions take over. And the other thing that I was looking into is, at some point, somebody's going to trip. Whether it's Manchester City or Arsenal. And neither one of them had the luxury to trip. Liverpool already did against Everton. And so it feels like, all right, well, if somebody's going to trip, and at some point it's got to be either Manchester City or Arsenal, Well, what better scenario than a game that is highly competitive, emotional, that perhaps you don't worry so much about the quality of play, but about the bad challenge, a 50-50 duel, the stadium is pushing you. You can see the scenarios by which this could be the moment in which Arsenal trip. If for no other reason, you're looking at an Arsenal team that, yeah, Jules just mentioned, it's four matches that have been stressful matches up until the Chelsea game where they were fully dominant. And so it's hard for me to kind of make an argument against Arsenal, and this isn't an argument against Arsenal. It's more along the lines of these games have a way of ruining somebody's party. And it so happens to be Arsenal's party that Spurs has a chance to ruin.
Well, the party continues here on this set tonight because Jules will be joining us for extra time answering your questions that you've also kindly sent in. So make sure to check out the most recent edition of Extra Time every single day over on our YouTube channel. The FA Cup final is around the corner. Man City taking on Manchester United for a second consecutive year, May 25th, 9 a.m. Eastern, for all the coverage of the FA Cup final. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Arda Güler scored the only goal of the game on what was his first La Liga start for Real Madrid as Real Madrid beat Real Sociedad 1-0 on Friday night to go 14 points clear at the top of the table ahead of Barcelona's game against Valencia on Monday. Luis Garcia is in Kuala Lumpur, but has tuned in tonight to join us on the show. Yeah, he definitely gets around. And Sid Lowe has managed to stay dry somehow in San Sebastian. Sid, talk us through what we saw tonight.
Well, we saw in the second half more or less what we saw in the first half, and this is what we were talking about at half-time, which was a Real Sociedad side that had quite a lot of the ball, that was reasonably creative with it, that had a lot of the territorial advantage, but that couldn't find a finish and couldn't create sufficient numbers of really clear chances to have scored, and that Real Madrid scored from really not very much. Ali at half-time, I think, described it as scoring from absolutely nothing. By the end of the game, there wasn't a huge amount more added to that. And as you say, Real Madrid, that little bit closer to a league title that's been really theirs, I think, since they put four goals past Girona, what's that, about 5 or 6 weeks ago. I think from that point on, we all knew that the league title was only going to one place.
A lot of changes we saw tonight, Luis. Lots of rotations for Ancelotti with that big game in the Champions League ahead, and they still won the game.
And yes, that's the way that Real Madrid has been handling almost for 2 or 3 months every single game at the weekends. Very focused on the Champions League, but every weekend just making bigger and bigger the gap between them and first Girona and after Barcelona. Once again with the rotation, we wanted to see Arda Güler, what he can offer to this Real Madrid side. And well, he wasn't involved much, but in the right moments. Some skills, I think that ability is something that we all knew. The talent that a young player can bring to the creation or creativity at the front, but that fantastic goal that put the leading for Real Madrid, and at the end it deserved the 3 points. So a lot of rotation, but once again the focus is on the Champions League in midweek, and it was a matter of time for Real Madrid to lift the trophy. They are closer and closer. And, well, Barcelona will have to wait for next year.
When Bayern take a look at Real Madrid's record this season, they've actually only lost 2 games all season, and those 2 games were both to Atleti, Ale. And yet again, they've got the job done tonight, and not with their first team either.
Yeah, this was the definition of an alternative team for Carlo Ancelotti and Real Madrid. And we mentioned in the pregame, look, if there was ever a time to play Real Madrid, this is it. Real Sociedad didn't quite get the memo. Never really troubled Real Madrid. There was a stat that came on screen late in the match that said chances created. And it was Real Sociedad 6, Real Madrid 1. But that's all they needed, one. Real Sociedad could have played this match until midnight. Actually, you know what? Until tomorrow, and they still wouldn't score, right? They don't believe they can score. And so Real Madrid, very solid, just behind the ball, said, okay, you have the ball. Turrientes, to Zubimendi, to Oyarzabal, to Takekubo, and back around to Turrientes, and here we go again. And it happened time and time and time again, never threatening behind, never threatened with service into the 18-yard box, never threatened to turn Real Madrid around. No, none of that was happening. And Real Madrid, without doing much, and at halftime, and Sid said it, they hadn't done a whole lot of anything. They didn't do much more in the second half. Even the guys that came on the field, you're thinking, okay, well, now Vini comes on the field, Valverde comes on the field, maybe we're going to see something different. No, Vini came on the field, it's a bunch of turnovers. It didn't get much better for Real Madrid, but it didn't need to. And I think that is Real Madrid. I think if you want to define Real Madrid this season in La Liga, they did what was required. In order to win the title, they did what was required. They beat Girona when they had to beat Girona. Huh? They beat Barcelona when they had to beat Barcelona. And when they had to play these games that felt like, oh, man, I can't believe we have to go to San Sebastian. It's going to be rain. It's going to be wet. How are we going to do this alternative team? They did enough. They win the game. In the case of Arda Güler, this is what I would say. If you want to define his game, you can look at the goal if you want to. There's a touch in the 67th minute when the ball comes from Luka Modric, and he feels the pressure of Javier Galán getting tied to him, and he just kind of flicks it over to himself. And in that moment, you kind of go, yeah, the goal, important, wins the 3 points. But that touch, I like that. There is substance to his game. We just need to see more of it more consistently.
Yeah, very excited to see a lot more of it as well. It is a whole different prospect on Tuesday, though, when even though Bayern Munich have not been at their best, it is fair to say this season, they have been looking a lot better of late. Now, this is a classic in Champions League competition, 20 titles between them. And in their previous meetings, you can see it's pretty evenly balanced as well. 11 wins for Bayern Munich, 12 for Real Madrid, and plenty of goals scored as well. But Real Madrid's our favourite for this clash, Stevie. Yeah. Should they be?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think Bellingham, Rodrigo and Vinny, that is what Bayern Munich have to fear. Because it will be somewhat on the break. I mean, I don't think Real Madrid aren't going to be as deep as they were against City just because of the way City play. But they're still going to be somewhat counter-attacking. And that's bad news for Bayern. Yes, recently they've been better. But that back line you can't trust. And with those three having had a nice rest, 100% ready to go, ooh, I wouldn't like to play for Bayern Munich this week.
Sid, what's the feeling in Spain about what's next up for Madrid in the Champions League?
Well, the reason they were playing tonight, Real Madrid, on a Friday night, I'll give them a little bit more time for Bayern Munich, which isn't to say they're fearful of them, but it is to say, of course, that this is part of a process now where the Spanish league is trying to help its teams, and there's an awareness that Bayern Munich are a difficult proposition. But I think after what happened against Manchester City, no one has any doubt that Real Madrid are the favourites. Now, that's not to say it will necessarily play out that way, but you look at what Real Madrid have done in the Champions League in the last 5 or 6 years, quite apart from the way that the number of titles they've won, it's the way that they've won it. It's that sense that there's always something that they can do, even if they're not playing particularly well. And you can look at some of the games in this year's competition where they've not played particularly well. Against Leipzig, they weren't that good. It took a very late Jude Bellingham winner to beat Union Berlin earlier on in the competition. There's been moments where you haven't thought that they're at their very best, but they find a way. And I think everybody feels, in Madrid at least, that that's likely to be the scenario against Bayern Munich. And as you say, you talk about that capacity to counter-attack, then Real Madrid, I think, are unmatched in that. The other thing, of course, to bear in mind in this, and given the way that Real Madrid won the Champions League in recent years, and you look back at the season in which they beat Paris Saint-Germain and Chelsea and Manchester City at the Bernabeu, the second leg is at home. So let's just imagine a scenario in which they go to Munich and they get beaten. Even then, I don't think anyone in Madrid will say, it's done. In fact, if they were 2-0 down after the first leg, I think people would almost enjoy it more, the chance to come back to the Bernabeu and have a comeback, which isn't to say that's the ideal scenario. But there's something about Real Madrid at the moment. You just feel like no matter what happens, they will find a way.
Talking about feelings, Sid, because it was the headline on one of the Catalan papers, Mundo Deportivo, about Xavi staying on. And we're getting a chance to talk to you guys now, you and Luis, about this decision. Let me start with you, Sid. Were you surprised to see it? And what's the feeling been about it?
Not remotely surprised to see it. On the face of it, this is a shock, obviously, because it's less than 3 months since he said he was going, but not at all surprised. Because if you look at the way that Xavi has been responding and you look at the results in the last two, three, maybe even four weeks, there's been a definite move towards this. Now, Xavi has been asked the same question in every single press conference after every single game, time and time and time again. Does this change anything? Because, of course, Barcelona went on that run of 13 games without being beaten. Does this change everything? He kept saying no and no and no and no. And it got a little bit silly. But then you notice that the no starts coming with, well, nothing's changed. And he was using the Spanish phrase, which Luis will be familiar with, a día de hoy. As of today, nothing has changed. Well, of course, as soon as you're saying that as of today, nothing has changed, well, tomorrow's another day. And it was really, really clear that there was a sense that the way that he felt about the job, the way that Barcelona felt about him, the way that he was engaging with players and with fans, and of course results, was shifting into a better place. And I think at that point you started the kind of feeling that actually he knows that even if it's not perfect, this is what he wants to do. And Barcelona are looking at it as well. And this is a key element. Never overlook this key element. Barcelona weren't finding it easy to find a replacement. So you get to a point where actually this kind of makes sense. But to answer your question about how do people feel about it, what do people think? I don't think anybody is, how do I put this? I don't think anyone is celebrating this decision. I don't think anyone is thinking, oh, wow, it's absolutely fantastic that Xavi's continuing. I think most people think, well, it's kind of the right thing. It's kind of normal. But I don't think anybody thinks that this is a huge success. In a way, there's a slight embarrassment that they've been through these 3 months when they needn't have done.
Well, let's put that theory to the test, shall we? Luis, are you celebrating this decision?
Yes, of course, I'm celebrating the decision because he's a friend of mine. I think that he can do a good job at Barcelona. He did it last year, and this year, because of so many different situations, he has been struggling. But in the end, I think that Xavi deserves another chance to prove that he's a fantastic manager and that he can bring this Barcelona to the next level. And I agree with Sid. Xavi's been changing the way to address this matter. He's been changing the way he was answering. No, I'm not the important one. Let's focus on the game. I'm not the important one. The important ones are the players. So it was delaying to say, no, I haven't changed my mind and I'm going to continue living. So I was expecting, I had in the back of my head something that he was saying, yeah, if the things are going well, and I think Xavi felt that, felt the confidence of the crowd in many of the last games, felt the confidence of the chairman, and of course felt the confidence of the players. And being at that point, if the club managed to give him some more players, couple maybe that he can adapt, that he can bring to this 11, I think that Xavi can change the course of this Barcelona for next year. So I'm happy for Xavi and I'm happy for Barcelona.
Sid, we're seeing some conflicting reports on the backroom staff and what's changed there for Xavi. What reports have you seen on this situation?
Well, the situation is essentially that what Barcelona want to do is change or at least update slightly the approach to the physical preparation. And so I think what we're going to see is we are probably going to see a new coordinator of the fitness training and the fitness regime that they use. And I think we'll probably see a change in the staff relating to physiotherapy as well. Physiotherapy and pre-match and post-match preparation of players. There was a suggestion at one point that there might even be a desire to change the assistant coach, or at least to add an extra assistant coach. There was talk about Dominic Torrent, who had worked, of course, with Pep Guardiola. That, I don't think, is going to happen. Although, it wouldn't amaze me if at the end of the season that gets readdressed. But I think what we'll see is a shift in the in the building of the team in terms of the fitness preparation for the side, but I don't think in anything else. And then as Luis was saying, by the way, that question about what do Barcelona do now next year in terms of strengthening the team, that's a really difficult one. Because the truth is, of course, as we know, they don't have the financial muscle to do that. And it's going to be very difficult for them to reinforce the team. But they are talking optimistically about being able to get to one-to-one. Now, what one-to-one means in the financial fair play rules is very simple. As the name suggests, you can spend a euro for every euro that you manage to make. So if you sell a player for 50 million euros, you can buy a player for 50 million euros. In other words, you can't just go and buy. You can only do it if you make savings, but you're now back on an even keel, which Barcelona haven't been in this position over the last 3 years. So that would be good news. The problem is, of course, that we've heard optimistic messages from Barcelona before, and until it actually happens, I think it's probably the right thing to do to be cautious about those kind of messages. And I don't think Xavi will be able to have really big name signings in the summer.
Sid, I'd love to get your opinion on La Liga taking their games abroad. You've obviously been covering the league for decades now. What are your thoughts on it actually being played, league games outside of Spain?
Well, this is something that Javier Tebas, the president of the league, has talked about before. This first came up, what is it, I think 3 years ago now, when he was talking about taking a Girona-Barcelona game abroad. One of the reasons why this has become an issue again is, of course, before it was blocked by the Spanish Federation, because Tebas and Rubiales, the president of the Spanish Federation, didn't get on at all and the Federation blocked it. Now, what's happened since then? Two really big things. One, the Federation has taken the Super Cup to Saudi Arabia. So their argument that you can't take games abroad looks a little bit weak. And the other, of course, as everybody knows, Rubiales has now been forced out of the Federation. So Tebas is going to try again. Now, I have a number of issues with this. And one of the ones that I have is that I'm a little bit doubtful about the impact, the real impact on a foreign market, in this case probably the US, but it may well be that they look at other countries as well, in terms of the legacy of that game. Now, obviously, it's one thing to say, get a huge stadium, sell it out. Will you sell it out? Will that game generate money? Yes, it probably will. My doubt is whether it generates real money in terms of genuinely creating a new fan base, because presumably the immense majority of the people that go will be people who are already fans of Spanish football. They may not necessarily kind of start spending more money on Spanish football, following it more deeply than they already are. You may not get a huge influx of new fans, not least, of course, because La Liga's plan at the moment is for only one game. Now, I think we all probably realise that it will start with one game and it will end up being more. Then you're going to have the argument about which teams is it? What kind of compensation do you give to fans of those teams here in Spain if you take games off them here and take them, in this case, to the US or to wherever else it is they end up playing? I think it's problematic, but I don't think it's an insurmountable problem. But I must admit, personally, I'm uncomfortable with it.
OK, we're all based in the US here. Mm. On the point about getting new fans, and we know there are lots of La Liga fans already here in the US. Do you think that's something that it would be able to do to get new La Liga fans on board here?
Oh, man. You know, this is a conversation and from a different angle that has been taking place in Major League Soccer for a long period of time, that you bring in some of the European teams here to play MLS teams, and the hope is that those fans that are coming to watch the European team, whether that's Manchester United or Arsenal or Spurs or whoever it may be, and they're watching their local MLS team, that somehow they make the connection with their local MLS team. And so, therefore, next weekend when the local MLS team is playing at home and Manchester United has gone back home, those guys are going to come back. That crowd is going to come back. And I can just tell you, having gone through it myself, that doesn't quite happen. The moment that Barcelona goes home, the moment that Real Madrid goes home, those people that came to watch Real Madrid and Barcelona are not coming back to watch the local MLS team. I've seen it happen. I've gone through it myself. And so I have to then sort of play out this scenario that you're putting forth, Kay, and say, okay, if indeed it's Barcelona-Girona, the Barcelona fans are going to go crazy. They're all going to go watch, right? The Girona fans, wherever they may be, they're going to show up. And those are it. See, your regular Dallas Cowboys fan is not coming to watch Barcelona play and magically becomes a Barcelona fan. He's probably already, or he or she is already a Barcelona fan to begin with, if you're coming and showing up to watch this game. If you're going to pay whatever money you're asked to pay in order to watch this game, it's because you're probably a fan of Barcelona already. And if you're making the five-hour drive to watch Girona play, it's because you're probably a hardcore Girona fan to come and watch your team play. I don't think you're making new fans. I just think you're strengthening your position as Barcelona fans or whoever the other team may be. So this idea that by playing games abroad, you're attracting a new crowd, yeah, a casual sort of new eyes onto La Liga. But to follow it week in, week in, and week out, I don't think that's quite the case. I think that's something that plays very well in a boardroom and in a presentation, in a PowerPoint presentation, but it doesn't play well in reality.
So no from you too, Stevie?
Yeah, absolutely. I can't get my head around why MLS would let them anywhere near the place, quite frankly. Because, as Ali's saying, you know, some people will come on one night, and obviously MLS thinks, or would think, again, talking boardroom, well, if these people come to our stadium, or our stadiums, then maybe they'll come back when this team's not here. But as Ali said, the reality is that's not what happens. The whole day out, night out, there's a new circus in town, and then when it goes, then everybody else goes with it.
Luis, as a player, do you like it?
As a player? No, probably not. But I would like to say something about it because probably we are not seeing in the business plan that probably La Liga has been doing for the past 15 years. Let's say that I traveled to the US back in 2003 and we were playing Barcelona against AC Milan, Barcelona against United, against United and against Juventus. There were 10,000 people back in Boston, New York, and the other one was San Francisco, I think it was. 10,000 people back then. I went on the pre-season tour 4 years back, 5 years back with Barcelona, with that B team, let's call it this way. There was no Messi, there was no Luis Suarez, and they were playing against Spurs, Tottenham Hotspur. And there were 70,000 people. Every single year, it's been increasing the number of people is watching football. Of course, if we try to think that La Liga is going to go to the MLS or to the US, and because they were going to play one game there, it's not going to do much. Yeah, it's true that in 1 year and 2 years, no. But the battle in between Premier League and La Liga has been always there. If you go to the market in Asia, of course, it's Asia, the one follows Premier League. So La Liga has been trying to catch up every single year. And of course, it's always very difficult. So that's why they are trying to open the market in the United States. It's the only way to battle in. The fans, of course, they are going to be angry. That's something that we all know. But I'm sure that if you ask the fan, listen, would you like to bring Mbappe to Real Madrid? Would you like to bring the top players to Barcelona? Would you like to bring top players to Atletico Madrid? Yes, all will agree. And how the teams are going to get the money to get those players? You have to find a way. And a good way is to go to other countries, to go to other markets and try to bring infrastructure, try to bring investment. And that's the way. That's why La Liga is trying to implement a way of bringing investment to all the teams in La Liga. And what way is? Go to the United States. A good market, massive market that is growing very much, as we've seen with MLS and the arrival of players like Lionel Messi, Busquets, and so on. So I think that if we think in the short period, yes, of course, it's not going to be worth it. But if we go and look to the 10, 15 years, that's, I think, that La Liga is trying to think about, I think it will be a fantastic investment.
Speaking of things that might not be worth it, Sweden as a country and a football federation have decided that VAR is probably not worth it. And they've become the first country to reject the introduction of VAR. They plan to introduce it, but a majority of Swedish clubs were, quote, actively opposed to its introduction. Sid Lowe doesn't necessarily disagree with the Swedes either.
Holy smoke, is that?
My goodness.
It's a very young Sid. Wow. Sid says, good on him. I'm not 100% sure anymore what I would do, but very often my gut reaction on VAR is in the bin. Oh. And genuinely, I'm not convinced that you, Sweden, in this case, would lose that much by playing without it. So, Sid, you can see their point, it's fair to say.
I certainly can. Have I ever told you how much I like the Swedes? Good on you, Sweden. I mean, look, this is a much, much, much broader debate, and it's one that we would need a lot more time on. And actually, I wouldn't have, as I mentioned in that tweet, I wouldn't have a really, really clear answer on it. But my issue with VAR, and I've always said this, and I think this is one of the reasons why I kind of don't engage, or I tend not to engage with people saying, yeah, but what about this decision? What about that decision? My issue with VAR is very rarely about the justice or otherwise of it. It's about the impact it's having on the games themselves and on the way that games are refereed. So you get decisions where you wait too long. You get a game that gets stopped and started. I think you see very, very minor things become game deciding things all the time because they get spotted by VAR, which isn't to say it's wrong that they get spotted, but things that didn't happen before. And I also think one of the problems with VAR, I think, is that fundamentally the its introduction was predicated, from my point of view at least, on two, I'm going to call them lies. That's maybe lie is a bit of a strong word, but on two false premises. And premise number one was, before VAR, football was an absolute disaster. It was terrible. Terrible injustices were happening all the time, and we desperately, 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 desperately needed to do something. We really didn't, you know. Football was all right. Yes, there was some injustice. Yes, there were some bad decisions. But it wasn't a terrible, terrible thing that we absolutely had to fix. And the second false premise upon which it was based is precisely the word I've just used, something we had to fix. And because we started talking about technology, and because we started talking about replays, and because we started talking about clear and obvious, we allowed ourselves to believe, now admittedly this is our fault, no one else's, and it's all of us, we allowed ourselves to believe, ah, but with VAR it'll be fine. There will be no more injustice. There will be no more bad decisions. There will be no more problems. And there are. And there are, and people will always say to you, but it's not the technology, it's the people applying it. Yes, absolutely. But the technology changes the way that we do things. So that idea that we really had to fix it, I think, was false. And that idea that it would be fixed was always going to be false. But of course, now it's harder for us to take when things go wrong, when decisions are bad, because we think, well, how can it be wrong? We've got this amazing technology. And so there's a bit of me that thinks, you know what, in terms of the actual experience of the game and just enjoying it, in the bin with it.
Yeah. Hang on, he might as well drop that mic right now.
No. Can I just say?
Passionate plea from Sid Lowe.
No, for somebody who claims to be on defense, whether he doesn't know that we use VAR or not, that seemed very convincing that you hate VAR, Sid. You hate VAR. Just come out and say it. Don't tell me that you're on defense on it. You just hate it.
No.
And explain it as such.
I am on the defense a little bit. I am on the fence a little bit because I accept, having said all those things, I accept that now, if you see a game, and there are some games, for example, in the early rounds of the Copa del Rey when there's no VAR, and you see a bad decision, it's hard now, isn't it? Because you think, oh, but I know that could be fixed. And it is hard. And there are bits of VAR that I think, for example, that would, you know, automatic offsides. I think, well, that doesn't really get in the way. That doesn't waste much time. It doesn't break the flow of the game. I'm sort of with that. And offside is objective as well, although I do understand the argument that says, how can we be ruining goals and ruining goal celebrations for the sake of something that's absolutely minuscule? I'd be well behind goal line technology, which, funnily enough, is the one bit of VAR that Spain doesn't have. So it's got all these terrible bits of VAR that ruin the game. And the one thing that you can do really quickly, really objectively, without any problems, nah, we won't have that one. We'll have all the rubbish bits instead. And so I genuinely am not sure, because I think we've gone too far with VAR to go back on it. And I think I would look, not just me, but like those of us who are kind of a little bit unsure about VAR, we would look like a bunch of old dinosaurs if we now wanted to get rid of it. But I would very, very much be in favour of a really stripped back version of VAR. And of course, that comes down to that phrase, doesn't it? Clear and obvious. Part of the problem is we can't agree on what clear and obvious is. So it's funny, really, because clear and obvious is not clear and obvious.
That sounds like Sid might be rummaging back in the bin for what he put in the bin.
It's like, I really hate it, but I don't hate it that much.
Where
I kind of hate it. I want it. I don't want it.
Listen, this is Stevie. Did he convince you?
No. You can't go back on. The thing is, Sid, I love the way you put, well, you know what? We did get decisions wrong, but it's okay.
It was all right.
It's okay now and again to get a decision wrong. We're going to, again.
Yeah.
And you actually covered every single base when you were defending it by saying, well, somebody will always say about this goal and that free kick and that, as if it doesn't matter. Well, it does matter. And it's important. And the important thing is that VAR, I think the game is better for VAR, but we just got to learn to use it better. The fact that they were taking a step.
We really have.
The fact that we're taking a step now with the offside, now it's going to be, what, what's the official name?
Semi-automated
is going to be quicker. That's a step in the right direction. So we're taking a step in the right direction using VAR. We cannot go back to all this nonsense about we don't need VAR and goals are not goals and, well, it would have been a goal, but the referee missed it or the linesman missed it. We can't go that way. We just got to accept it and get better at it.
If Oviedo was depending on a call by VAR to be promoted to La Liga, I'm pretty sure that Sid would be all about VAR.
Me too. Louise... Now,
I mean, in all seriousness, that is part of the problem, isn't it? I mean, that, Ali's absolutely right, by the way. But in all seriousness, that is part of the problem. Is, of course, we look at VAR and we go, oh, it's great when it rescues us. And when it goes against your team, you think it's the worst thing in the world. I just wanted to throw a statistic at you, by the way.
Oh, here we go.
And this is a statistic, I think, from last year or maybe the season before in Spain. And I was talking to a former referee about this. And obviously... I have a problem with this stat because this stat is based on someone's judgment. And I think it was based on a judgment of the Spanish Technical Committee of Referees. But the stat was that pre-VAR, referees got on average, I think over the course of a season, I think it was 94.5% of decisions right. Now, I'm inventing the stat, but I just don't remember exactly. But it's more or less what I'm saying to you. 94 and a bit percent they got right pre-VAR. Post-VAR, it was something a bit over 97. I think it was 97, close to 98%. And I must admit, I did think to myself, 3 percentage points for all of the ways that VAR impacts upon the game doesn't actually seem like that much of an improvement to me. And what I mean as much as anything else is, if it was 94, 95% of decisions before, that's what I mean by it wasn't really, really terrible before. And I don't think, you know, we didn't spend 100 years saying football's completely rubbish because too many bad decisions happen. Once in a while, a bad one would happen, but not that many.
Can we agree that Sid is not on the fence?
No.
Can we agree that he's not on the fence?
I'm not on the fence.
I don't know how many cameras they have. I don't know how many cameras they have at Swedish games. But I know.
Here we go.
But I know what we do have in the Prem and La Liga and the other bigger leagues. And can you imagine with no VAR? Every show like ours would be talking forever about all the mistakes the referees made. The referees would end up being...
But we still are. We're still arguing after every game.
Yeah, but we're arguing about this. You try opening that up like that. Because we think referees can make better decisions when the game's going at 100 mile an hour and they've got to make a quick decision. You're telling me that they're making better decisions doing that than somebody being able to see it again. The fact is, we do argue about the guy in VAR who does make a horrendous decision. But can you imagine if we got rid of it? But you've still got 60 million cameras.
And it's a wonderful world.
60 million cameras.
I can see rainbows.
We'd just be sitting here looking at replays all game going, you got that wrong, got that wrong, got that wrong.
All I heard is that you want to be part of the ESPNFC Sweden.
What?
In Stockholm. In Gothenburg.
Let's end it here so we can let Sid and Luis finally get some rest. Luis, you're going to play the Emperor. Is it a thumbs up or a thumbs down on what Sid had to say?
No.
Okay. We'll let you guys get some rest now. Thanks so much for being with us. And if you want to see something just as passionate as Sid this weekend, make sure to catch the Seville Derby on Sunday. It is Real Betis against Sevilla. Sid will be pitch side, no doubt getting very angry about VAR. There's some big games this weekend, including Atleti against Athletic and Barcelona taking on Valencia as well.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
All right, that will do it for the latest edition of ESPN FC. We'll be back with you all weekend, but stick around right now. Jules is joining us. They'll be answering your questions on Extra Time. We've got them right here. Stay with us. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. We've got LA and Stevie here in the studio, and Julian Laurent is joining us as well from London. Stevie's freezer's broken. That was the news of the day. And his wife's away. So
heartbreak.
Heartbreak, yeah. All his ready meals were in there that his loving wife had prepared for him.
That's right. So Stevie's solution, very clear.
Before, salvage them.
Before they go to waste.
All right. Stevie was right about Everton being a banana skin weeks ago when he was analysing the run of games remaining. How does it feel to be right, Stevie?
Oh, here we go. Well, he already told us that he was right in the show.
I was thinking about it the whole game. You know when you just want to be wrong? I just felt it, and I smelt it, and then I watched it. It's annoying. Did you bring that up to annoy me?
No, I didn't bring it up.
It's part of the question, Stevie.
Even thinking about it is annoying.
Okay.
Which part?
Well, the part that... This is as bad an Everton team as they've had in many moons. And we still got a beat.
Yeah, the good thing is that you're over it.
Yeah, exactly.
You turn the page.
All right. Let's get another question.
Yeah. Okay.
You turn the page, Steve.
This is for you, Ali. Should Gula go on loan next season or fight for his spot at Madrid?
Well, look, I'm always for fighting for your spot. And if you can make it in Real Madrid and fight your way to be part of the rotation at Real Madrid, and that's, I think, what he should be trying to fight for first. Not thinking I'm going to start matches. Let me be part of the rotation. Let me gain the trust of the manager. And as I become part of the rotation, then maybe there is another place for me to be. And then maybe there's another spot for me to be able to impact the play on the field. But right now, he's not even part of that rotation. And what we have seen from him is flashes, and it was the same today. He scored a goal, had a couple of nice touches. Really, you can see the talent is there that is waiting to come out, but he's had injury issues. There's been some inconsistencies. There's been a malcontent and kind of like, I'm not playing, kind of whiny attitude. All of that has to change. Get in the rotation first, and then you can fight for bigger things.
If he does get a sniff, who gets there?
Well, let's assume that Jules Boy Mbappe is coming to Real Madrid next year, right? That's when it becomes a little bit more crowded for Arda Güler.
Forget it. Go on loan.
Yeah. Okay.
You have little faith. Right. Okay, for Jules.
Never mind. Don't fight.
Forget it.
If you were Arteta, what players would be your priority in the summer transfer market, and who would you try to unload?
That's a really good question. I think the club is already working on that. Edu, Mikel Arteta, all of that. I think finding another defensive midfielder or somebody that can play either in the double pivot, a bit like what Jorginho is doing. I think Thomas Partey would probably be leaving the club in the summer. Someone like Zubimendi, who they really, really like, and they're not the only ones. From Real Sociedad, who's young, who is a really good player on the up with a lot of energy, who could really slot in pretty well. Arsenal, I think this is one. A left back, I think there's another position there to be looked at. Whether someone like Ferland Mendy, for example, who could be leaving Real Madrid, is of interest because Alphonso Davies is going to come to Real Madrid probably this summer or maybe the one after. Ferland Mendy would be, I think, a good contender for a position at Arsenal. So they, for me, the midfield, that number six and the left back are the two positions that really maybe need the most the strengthening in the squad for next season.
Speaking of unloading, tonight, Jules, Sid Lowe had a big say on what he thought about VAR, and the producer has told me that you were watching the show and asking him, what's going on?
No, it's just that we've had this debate and discussion about VAR for a long time. I'm just like Stevie. I agree with everything Stevie said, and I know, I mean, Sid especially was on the fence, but not really on the fence, under the fence, over the fence, on the right of the fence, on the left of the fence. He covered the whole fence. But in the end, I'm with Stevie. It's there. We're not going to go back to what was there before. I know Sweden are doing it, but we're not going to go back to what before. Let's just make sure that it works better. That's it.
Yeah, okay. You guys all in agreement on that. All right. What's the most intimidating stadium you played in that you didn't expect to be? And Ali, if you can think of one now, you can say it. No? Never? Oh, Stevie's never intimidated.
No. No. I don't know. It's like, I always find this strange when people say about different places. I mean, I mean, noise, flares, angry faces. Fantastic. People shouting at the boss, banging on the boss. Yes, please. Fantastic. Why not? It's great.
You actually loved it.
Absolutely, aye.
LA,
magic.
And to your point, Stevie, when you go away and play, say, for example, in World Cup qualifiers in South America, you get all of that. In most places. Most places in South America, you get that sort of reaction. And you kind of go, all right, you get used to that. What was intimidating to go in and play Brazil, not only the fact that they had the players that they had available to them, is that when we're going to the stadium, people are not banging on the boss or throwing things at the boss. No, no. They're dancing on the streets. They're celebrating. They're there. Get it. And all that. They know. They know what they have available. They know what we have available.
Have they got any idea what's coming?
Yeah, that's right.
Look at them.
That's right.
The boss.
That's right. And so in the stadium, it's not like we come out on the field and they're booing us. No, they're concerned about their partying and their dancing and the thing and whatever. They know that Ronaldo is about to score. They know Ronaldinho is about to score. They know, right? We pretend not to know, and we're trying to tell ourselves, ah, here we go. This is our chance. This is when we make history. 3-0, game's in mind. See you guys later. And
what
it happened.
What was the manager like? So imagine being the manager, right? You're Venezuelan manager. you're playing against Brazil, against all that mob. And as a manager, you've got to come up with some reason why you're going to get a result.
Yeah, no.
What did they ever come up with?
Well, no. I cannot remember because it wasn't memorable, I'll say that much. But I will also say that we went to Brazil and we tied Brazil in World Cup qualifiers. But to the intimidation factor, it's enough. Let me just say this. It's enough when you are standing in the tunnel with Brazil and you see that bright yellow jersey, right? That'll get your attention. But when you walk out and the people are celebrating already, they're already dancing. We haven't even started the game. They already know what the outcome is going to be. We're trying to tell ourselves otherwise.
They're all looking up at the scoreboard to see if there's any goals. Yeah. It's still 0-0.
One more time with what the... I love that that's what scares you. Like, oh, no.
Are you kidding me?
That's my favourite one.
Like, what is...
I love that. All right.
Oh, one more thing on that, and because I just thought about it. We had just played Brazil at home. We had just lost to Brazil at home 4-0. Both teams are sitting on the tarmac waiting for our charter flights to go to the next World Cup qualifier. Of course, Brazil's plane comes first and they take off. But before they take off, while we're all here long face with 4 goals on us, oh my goodness, what are they gonna do? Are they gonna fire the coach? What's happening? These guys, it's from here to there. They're dancing, they're celebrating, they got the drums, and Marcelo's got the drums, and this guy's got that, and that guy's dancing, and you're like, yeah, it must be nice. And of course their flight gets here first. Must be nice.
Must be very nice. All right, for Stevie K and Jules, with the Euros this summer, make a case for why the casual fan should cheer on your countries this year. Yeah, Jules, you're gonna have to make your case.
Well, you should cheer for France because, we never get to finals, we never win anything. So we need your support to finally do win something. Also, we have the best player in the world in Kylian Mbappe. And we have a cool shirt as well, so come and cheer on us.
Okay, that was too much arrogance for me to support that.
I don't know. I don't know whether they still do it, and they probably don't, but when I was younger, and I used to go to the Scotland games, you would be standing on the terrace and there'd be bottles of whiskey getting passed along and people would just get a swig and pass it on. Honestly, I was...
So this is a selling point for a casual fan.
I was 16, right? And I'm standing,
very COVID-friendly.
16, I'm standing in Scotland then. Next minute, these bottles of whiskey are getting passed out and everybody's just going like that and having a dip. Then another one would come. Unbelievable.
Because it makes watching the team easier.
Well, I'm just very generous as Scots, you know.
Why should the casual fan get behind Scotland?
Well, in case they get offered free whiskey.
All right.
Well, you'll have a good time. You go with Scotland fans, you'll have a good sing-song, you'll have a good laugh, you'll have a good time. Might not win a game, You'll have a good time. You'll enjoy yourself.
You should have kept that part out, Stevie.
No, that's the obvious part.
Okay.
That's the only guarantee.
Hopefully he can get behind us. We have some lovely young players. We always get close recently, but we just don't quite do it. And I'm sick of the heartache. I'm sick of the heartbreak. And so is Dan. That's Dan on my side as well. Okay. So if you want me and Dan to be happy...
You're selling it very well, isn't
you? If you want me and Dan to be happy, get behind England.
Okay.
Right?
Here we go.
You've just depressed everybody. Followed by get behind England.
Harry Kane, Jude Bellingham, Declan Rice, loads to enjoy about England this year, all right?
And you had to mention Dan. That takes points away.
Yeah, because Dan feels the pain of the England train with me every single time.
Well, let's hope there's more pain to come.
Oh, thanks, Stevie.
You're welcome.
All right.
You didn't convince me, Kay.
No.
We don't convince many to get behind England. They usually just complain about how arrogant our fans are and get upset about it's coming home and don't get the whole point of that song. Yeah.
So it's not coming home.
You're not upset.
No.
Why are you worked up about it?
It's coming home. I'm not worked up about it. I'm not worked up. All right. Okay, Stevie. How much confidence does a defender get playing in front of a solid goalkeeper? Oh. Eric Dyer never looked this good at Spurs or England, but he's been so solid at Bayern, constantly benching Kim Min-jae. Is it all because of an all-time great Neuer behind him to sweep up those loose balls?
I mean, in that case, I don't know, but I'll tell you what, it's fantastic when you don't even think twice about the guy behind you. You think he's going to save it all the time, you think he's going to make good decisions. I mean, in the 80s, people would have big centre-forwards and they'd fling balls into the box. And we had Brucey Grobbelaar in goal, and he came for everything. And as soon as the ball left the winger's foot, or the fullback's foot, whoever it was that was putting it in, and it got to a certain height, I didn't even have to think twice about it. I knew Bruce was coming. And so we would just fall in behind, just in case. Not, you know, 99 times out of 100, he'd take it out of the sky, fantastic. Odd occasion, maybe fumble. And so we would just get back into a position behind him, just to cover him, just in case. And I didn't even have to think about it. I knew he was coming. And as I said, 99 times out of 100, he collected it.
And while I appreciate the question, and I think the message that is conveyed in the question, that Eric Dyer has been better than anybody would have thought in him going to Bayern Munich, and that he has had more of an impact than they would have thought and they would have hoped. I think Thomas Tuchel brings Eric Dyer because he thinks he can give him an option off the bench, or if you're rotating players in and out, then maybe he's an option of a guy that can cover a hole, not a guy who's going to feature. Where the question and the premise loses weight is the fact that Sven Ulreich has been playing quite a bit because Manuel Neuer was injured for about a month. And that's coincided with the time in which Eric Dyer was playing. So, look, that's where the argument loses validity for me.
Okay.
In this specific case, not to the point of having a solid goalkeeper behind you. That's always going to make you a better player.
For Jules, what would the feeling be like in Paris if Kylian Mbappe should win the Champions League this season and then leave for Madrid?
I mean, I think the happiness will be incredible. I think everybody in Paris have now gone over the fact that he was leaving, that he was going to Real Madrid as a free agent as well. We've explained it many, many times on the show. So this is done. I think the fans now are just excited. By the end of the season, there's 7 games left, potentially 8 if they reach the Champions League final. They can win 3 more trophies, 1 potentially tomorrow, the league title, and then there will be the French Cup final, and then, as we said, potentially the Champions League final. And that's all they care about, is that Kylian can bring as many of those 3 extra trophies to the club. So if he does it, and if he does them all, including the Champions League, if you bring the Champions League home, that would be incredible. I just don't think his legacy would change if they only win the league and the cup and not the Champions League, for example. I think his legacy is already massive after 7 years at the club, and I think people have gone over the fact now that he was leaving. Everybody has moved on. Everybody's together now for them to try to get as many of those 3 trophies as they can.
Last question, and what a belter of a question it is. Mm. For Stevie, start, bench or drop? Sushi, shepherd's pie with corn or eggs benedict?
Easy. Top of the tree, shepherd's pie, no danger. Absolutely not. Not even
with the con.
It's not even getting substituted at any stage.
With the con.
It's with corn.
It's shepherd's pie
it's not
with
shepherd's
corn.
Pie. It's not.
But this is the whole point of the question.
Oh, I never saw the corn.
This shepherd's pie is with corn.
I could always pick out the corn.
No, you have to eat it.
I've got to eat it.
Yes.
I've decided.
Oh no.
Yes. Oh. Yes. Here we go.
Well, I can't eat sushi.
Game changer.
So it is absolutely out the window. I couldn't eat it. No chance.
Can you imagine Stevie using chopsticks?
Oh. Wow. No, he'll ditch the chopsticks quickly, is it? No. Give me that. Ah.
Shepherd's pie or eggs Benedict?
With corn.
See, with corn kills it.
Well, yes.
Corn really kills it.
And what's your issue with eggs Benedict again? Please remind me.
Hey, what about that?
It's just a waste of time.
Hey, what about the guys that we had after in the classical watch party? Henry and Thor. With the nutrients that corn gives you.
Yeah. And pro-corn?
Well, she saw the two of them. It looked as though they'd eaten shepherd's pie with corn.
Okay.
It looked ill.
Eggs Benedict.
Do you know what? I can't eat shepherd's pie with corn. Okay. It goes against my religion.
So Eggs Benedict you've just got an issue with because it's a waste of time.
I can eat Eggs Benedict, but I just think it's a waste of time.
Why is that?
Well, what's the point?
Well, I don't know, but why is it a waste of time?
A bit more posh?
You got to have something with it.
Why?
Because you can't just eat eggs Benedict on its own. You got to have something to dip in it.
Oh, so you don't like that it's underneath whatever carb would be there?
I don't like it. No. So no.
Okay.
You're giving
wins. But it wins.
A really good.
It looks like it wins.
Eloquent argument.
Okay.
I could eat it.
All right.
I couldn't touch the other two.
I really hate corn. Corn gets benched. All right.
It affects the whole dish. It does. You laugh, but it does.
That makes the expression, it affects the whole dish.
Makes it sound as though it's something exotic, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Jules, don't be taking him out to any fine French restaurants because he won't appreciate it.
But you don't like corn, period, or just corn?
No, I like corn, yeah.
Okay, it's just
corn on the cob, right? It's, when it's mixed in, when it's put in together, it affects the taste.
Okay. Yeah. Of everything.
Yeah.
My palate is not used to that sort of nonsense. Oh,
and that is a fine palate.
Yes.
Sky class.
And an uneducated palate. All right.
Hey, I like what I like, all right?
We'll leave it there. So, we'll say goodbye.
So no sushi then. So
you should go.
Big weekend ahead and a common palate next week.